Down to Business with Bobby Kerr on News Talk.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Let's take a look at some business stories and indeed some others that are making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Bob Hoffman. He's the managing partner of Vista Executive Search, and Gina London. She's a Sunday Independent columnist and a communications expert. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning, Bobby.
Now, let's get straight into it. What about the thousands of Revolut customers who are to be refunded because of a charging blunder? This seems like a bit of bad press, Bob, does it not?
It does. I mean, obviously, they are an Irish institution. They have over 3 million customers in Ireland. So, but look, the story is 112,000 customers were overcharged on ATM transaction fees. It was only, on average, €3.95 per customer. Mind you, when you add it up, it's just under half a million. I think it's more about the optics. Revolut had some issues with their capability for anti-fraud about 6 months ago, and they've had to beef up their anti-fraud measures. But look, at the end of the day, they are a phenomenon in the Irish financial services area, and people now use it as a verb. They Revolut each other money. So they're a great organisation, but they've definitely dropped the ball on this issue.
Well, and
would I be right in saying, Bob, that Simon Harris's new personal savings and investments account schemes seem to be attractive to Revolut, that they're looking at maybe getting some new customers around this?
Well, at the end of the day, we have, is it 170 billion on deposit here in Ireland at a household level, and very little of it getting any proper return on investment. Most of it doesn't even surpass the rate of inflation. So Simon Harris's initiative is good. And yeah, Revolut would be a natural beneficiary from that, one would hope. But yeah, look, they still need to improve on these optics. They've had two of them now, and they just need to not have a third.
Yeah, and, you know, Revolut is good news for the consumer because they're going to be keeping pressure on the pillar banks to do things like increase deposit rates and just be a bit nicer to customers.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, they've shook up the market, the banking market in Ireland, no question about it. Obviously, the pillar banks now have Zip Pay. It's 3 years too late, but they've finally got it up and running. But it's very hard to catch an incumbent like Revolut when they have so much of a head start on the rest of them. But look, it's all about trust, isn't it, Bobby? If you lose trust in an organisation, I'm not suggesting anybody is, but trust is vital in business relationship.
Yeah. And just finally on this, Gina, you know, the average they're getting some investments through the Revolut accounts because they are very creative in getting people to buy, you know, other currencies. They're doing things that the pillar banks don't do. And the average age of the investors through Revolut is 37. So they seem to have attracted a younger cohort of bank customer.
I think younger people have come into the idea of digital banking is the way to go. They aren't growing up with the idea of brick and mortar institutions that so many of us older folks, if I can count myself as well, would have been grown up with. And so it is easier for them. And that's when Revolut has said that its customers have a total savings between all their balances more than $2 billion, right? rising more than two-thirds in just the last 12 months. You can imagine how desirable and how interesting that is for them. And I also want to make one comment on this story, too, that's important to note from a communication standpoint for Revolut, because the charges that were taken out in error from the ATMs was from a third party that was not Revolut itself. It was from the ATM company FinTech. And so if you think about it, Revolut could have said, we're going to chase it out through the third party. We're going to have our customers go through that way. But what they did do, which was a wiser thing for what they're trying to do apparently with their new customers and with the Simon Harris initiative to try to get that good press, is to take the ownership for themselves and go out and so be looking for your Revolut credit statements to be having that whopping €3.95 coming back in. But they didn't chase it through the third party ATM error people. They decided to do it themselves. And I think that is commendable.
I think so. Let's move to the UK now, Bob. Andy Burnham has cleared a path back to Parliament. Some ancestral links put the Makerfield by-election winner somewhere between Joe Biden and Tony Blair. Is he Irish?
Is he Irish? There's a bit of a mixture here. So just for people who don't know, Andy Burnham is the mayor of Manchester. And if nobody has equated him to Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, I'm going to, because there's a lot of similarities. Why is Andy going back into Parliament? He wants to do a run to take over from Keir Starmer. I personally don't think this is good for the UK. If it happens and Andy Burnham topples Keir Starmer, he will be the seventh prime minister they've had in 10 years. And when you add that on top of the layer of Brexit, it's not good for the UK. But anyway, he's a good politician, Andy Burnham. There is an Irish connection. His mother was a Murray. They were actually Protestants, and his father's side of the family was Catholic. That did cause a bit of tension, but apparently he relieved it when he decided to support Everton, which apparently smooths things over on these issues. So yeah, look, there is an Irish background, but the more serious aspect of this story is, does Britain need a seventh prime minister in 10 years? I would argue it's the last thing they need is another prime minister.
Yeah. Gina, if he were to become prime minister, he would possibly be in the top five most Irish UK prime ministers in history. There was a Dublin-born Duke of Wellington and a few others. Tony Blair's Donegal mother, Jim Callaghan's famine emigrant grandfather. So he could be one of them, no?
Well, potentially. I would hold off before he gets a Barack Obama type of a forecourt set up here in Ireland for him. But it always makes me kind of laugh when so many Irish of my lovely fellow Irish citizens will make jokes about Americans coming into Ireland saying, yeah, my great, 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 great grandfather was Irish and I've got so 0.1% of Irish blood. Like, oh, yeah, OK, fine. But then here we are playing the same game with someone that could potentially be the successor to Keir Starmer in the UK. So apparently you can have it both ways.
Same game, different guy. Now, Gina, I want to have you there. Michael O'Leary. Again, very interesting piece about him agreeing to extend his Ryanair contract into his 70s with a potential $153 million payday. I think negotiations may have been going on for some time.
Yes, and so I'm going to withdraw my own application to become CEO of the discount carrier, because this, wouldn't that be a lovely job to have if you're going to be able to get this kind of salary? He's been on a base salary annually for 1.2 million euros for some times, and so now his current contract, this particular Irish Times article points out, his contract does run out in 2028, so just a couple of years from now, and it does. His new contract, though, as you said, could net him 153 million, so not too bad. That's including the stock option plan, and it also does, as you mentioned, not only combine the as the article says, modest annual salary and his annual bonus, but then it also gives him an entitled maximum bonus equating about 50% of that base since 2024. And it is interesting because it is going to keep him in that front position then for well into his 70s, since he's 65 years of age now. So let's see if he's going to keep up his irascible style as he goes into his 70th decade. But it looks like the profits and the way that this company has been run under his leadership certainly does stead for him to be receiving his next round of contracting.
Bob, I would argue, if you say the profits for the year to March amounted to 2.26 billion at Ryanair, the projected profits under this new contract are up to a 4 billion euro sum. So if he brings in 4 billion, surely 153 million is small money.
Absolutely. I mean, look, Ryanair and Michael O'Leary are actually the same entity. That you really can't, you know, most companies can get a new CEO in and at some point Michael will retire, but his DNA is the airline and vice versa. And if you think about it, I could be corrected on this. I stand to be corrected, but I think they're the third biggest airline in the world by passenger numbers, not by the size of their fleet, but by passenger numbers. If he brings it to 4 billion a year net profit, that's an eye-watering 11 million a day profit. And of course he deserves it. If it's of that scale, I don't think people realize the scale of Ryanair.
Yeah. No, and again, if you look at, you know, the very humble beginnings, where that business has come. And, you know, we have to remember that this is an Irish company that has traded its socks off right across Europe. And it really is something, I think, from a business point of view, that we should be very, very proud of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's have a look at another great entrepreneur, Bobby Healy. He's 8 years since he founded Mana. He's been maybe running into a few difficulties, Gina, particularly around planning with South Dublin Council. Can you tell us more?
Yes, this is an interesting story because he just, of course, heads Mana. And for those of you who don't know, this is drone deliveries. And he founded this company back in 2019 and over in the north in particular, in Blanchardstown, and then some places in Galway and Cork and even in Tipperary, he's been doing these deliveries. So coffees and all sorts of different things have been being delivered across the airway. And interestingly, though, he has had difficulty, despite having successfully delivered 90,000 deliveries since 2024, he's had difficulty expanding. And so, for example, near where I live, in fact, and I wasn't one of the protesters, but he was not granted the drone delivery hub request that he wanted by the Dunleary Council, County Council, because there were hundreds of third-party objections to this expansion. And then last October, he was also refused Planning Commission, this article says, to get a delivery hub in Dublin 15. So he has been now announcing that he's going to cease the delivery operations altogether in Ireland and that he's really looking for more of a framework around how this should be provided so that it can give protection to companies like himself. And I will say anecdotally, one of the things that I have heard from others in Blanchardstown who were involved in some of these neighborhood groups, nothing actually particularly from Dundrum, I didn't know anybody there in that particular protest, but that there has been a lack of communications around bringing stakeholders together and helping them understand what drones mean and what they should be not afraid of when they see one of them coming across in front of their windows in their homes. And so the public outreach, my understanding, could have been better, which could have potentially helped pave the way for this more smoothly and not brought him into the situation that he finds himself in today.
Yeah, it does appear, you know, with all the technology and, you know, the idea, but the reality of drones flying across people's back gardens, you know, it just doesn't seem to be well received. And as I said, he's added eight years now. There's been plenty of test sites, and it almost looks like that he became so frustrated with the process that he was running out of road and he's going to bring his energy somewhere else.
Yeah,
what do you think, Bob? Do you think this could be a big change in strategy for the business?
He employs 200 people in Ireland. He's a serial entrepreneur, and it's one of these technologies. It's just a little bit ahead of its time. If you cast your mind back to when mobile phones exploded in Ireland in 1997, about all the concern about the telecom towers. I mean, I was involved in ESAT Digiphone. Look, telecom towers are ugly, but society needs them. Traffic lights are ugly, but we need them. The drone technology is changing the world, maybe not as much as the smartphone. I just think our government needs to man up and put in some legislation and some regulations around it. And I agree with Gina. It's one of these things, because let's be honest, we hear about drones every day of the week in Ukraine, unfortunately, for negative connotations, you know, in a warfare environment. But they can also do fantastic things in peacetime. So I really do think Bobby needs to stick to the course, encourage the government to bring in some legislation, maybe communicate with the communities a bit better, but certainly drones are here to stay.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see what happens. It is definitely a setback for the company. Bob, there's been some very interesting comments around an interview held by the KPMG managing partner, Ryan McCarthy. He's talking about pushing for more office days and the impact on AI on the headcount at KPMG, plus a few other things as well. It's a very good interview.
It certainly is. They're a very large employer in Ireland, 4,000 staff. They turn over about 600 million. And it's the nettle that CEOs up and down the country are grasping at the moment. How many days a week should their workforce work in an office environment and how many remotely? And then, of course, the second issue that's hitting them all, and especially these consulting companies, is AI. And I don't envy his position. I personally, as a recruiter, think the 2 or 3 day a week in the office fits most companies. 4 or 1 can work, but certainly people do need to come back to the office in some shape or form. Regards AI, I'm a well-known, I won't say critic, I'm saying 50% of AI won't see the light of day, but the other 50% will change the world. But I let other people worry about AI.
What about, leading by example? You know, he's sort of there trying to get people into the office. He's the only one with the dedicated office in the new KPMG headquarters. He says that was decided ever before he took up the position. Leading by example, has the genie sort of left the bottle in terms of the number of days people are now happy to spend at work? Will people come back for 5 days? I'm not sure they will.
Well, in this article, Bobby, it's interesting because, of course, the whole thing is featuring the new headquarters over on Harcourt Square, where KPMG spent more than 100 million euros to fit this out. So you imagine you've got yourself this world-class building. You've got, they can take all 3,000 of the KPMG workers that are here in the Dublin area on any given day. And yet, as you said, it only has one particular dedicated office for him, and other things are more like the hot officing, hot boxing, and that sort of thing. That said, he is very aware that up until now, people are coming in the office about 2 or 3 times a week. But if you've got this incredible headquarters in this facility, you do want to bring everyone in. And that's why he says in this article, the headquarters is supposed to open in October. He is hoping that it is also going to bring people back to the office every day. He stops short of saying he doesn't want to use the word mandatory, but the research is very clear. While hybrid and working from home has been certainly become the norm because of since COVID, that the organic brainstorming and people coming together and not relying just on technology for certain things and screens for your communications makes for a different type of productivity, for innovation, for collaboration when you are in the office. So will it be enough to just have a big building? No, because that's going to get boring after a while. You'll have to have other incentivizations for it. And it is important to note while we're talking about this, that one of the comments in this article about the AI and the use that KPMG is uptaking is to also be aware how important the human element is to making sure that AI isn't too, you're not too reliant on it, because this article talks about how just last week, when this article is coming out, that KPMG was forced to take down a global report on thought leadership because it included AI hallucinations. So we objectively need more people together in real time to interact and socially talk with one another and to put these types of AI things under notice that we're not going to be replaced by them. And that's why we have to human up. So can he get them back into this beautiful new office by October? We shall see.
Can I just jump in here with one observation that a lot of people seem to miss? It's very hard to get millennials to pick up the phone and ring people. They're not comfortable. It's not the world that they've grown up. Us Generation X, we started because the phone was the only way to communicate. So when you've got an open plan office and you've 3,000 people, the noise level is very discouraging to make basically audio communications. So I think there's a perfect storm coming of the millennial element of the workforce are, you know, just not wanting to make phone calls, partially because they're not used to it and partially because of the increased noise of an open plan office.
And Bob, is there any bit about that people almost don't want to get phone calls as well? That, you know, people don't seem to be bothered, you know, that they're not getting, like, I remember the amount of phone calls, maybe it's where I'm at in my career or whatever, but I remember fielding calls like crazy. And now I think the level of calls seems to have gone down dramatically, and partly maybe because, young people don't use it as a communications tool.
I think we've gone full circle. I actually use the phone now more than I used to because it's just much more effective. And you're right. I mean, people get dumped with emails and WhatsApps and texts and all sorts of written communication. And when the phone actually rings, I think a lot of people are a bit surprised that their iPhone actually is a phone primarily. So I'm going back to basics, and I love phoning people and I love receiving phone calls.
Well, I'll call you anytime, Bob.
Thank you, Bobby.
I will too, Bob.
Oh, great. The more the merrier.
Now, Gina, as someone from farmland Indiana, we're always interested in your take on U.S. politics. The new U.S.-Iran deal appears to be dividing Americans. And maybe you might give us your thoughts, if you would.
Well, certainly when we all woke up on Friday morning and saw that J.D. Vance was not getting on the plane to Switzerland and this MOU was not going to be signed as expected and as touted over the past few days that Trump was in with all the other world leaders at the G7, it was really alarming. And yet I had been speaking actually to a News Talk podcast earlier on Thursday about how Trump's hawks, and yes, many of the MAGA from my former hometown of Farmland, Indiana, thanks for that, Bobby, were very upset about what they saw in these 14 points on this page and a half MOU, in the sense that they didn't think it went far enough. It didn't have any real particulars of how the $300 billion that's supposed to be in restoration for Iran was going to be distributed and how it was going to be managed. And there were a lot more questions than there were answers. And it felt a lot shakier than the JCPOA, which is exactly what Trump had torn up in 2018. So there were plenty of Republicans that were critical as this was coming to light over the end of this past week. So now, then the reason, of course, that we had the abrupt postponement of this MOU, which we're still waiting to see what's going to happen, was because over that night, then, before Vance got on the plane to go to Switzerland, Israel launched another round of attacks in the south of Lebanon against Hezbollah. And one of the things also to point out from that MOU is that Lebanon was mentioned in it, but Israel was omitted, and Israel had not agreed to this MOU and this ceasefire. So Iran didn't send its delegation to Switzerland. So there's a whole lot going on right now about what is actually going to take place. It was always incredibly ambitious, if not ridiculous, to think that you were going to be able to put details to an MOU in 60 days, where the JCPOA from the Obama administration in 2015 took more than a year and had lots of parties involved. So there's a lot riding right now, not only on Trump and how he's going to try to be spinning this over the weekend, but J.D. Vance is in a real tough situation because, of course, President Trump was asked in the G7 this past week, what's going to happen with J.D. Vance, quote unquote, leading the delegation. And he said, well, if it's a success, I take credit for it. If it's a failure, I'm blaming J.D.
So he could be hung out to dry on this. Well, listen, thank you both for a great contribution. Thanks for going through all the business and international stories with me this morning. That's Gina London and Bob Hoffman. Enjoy your weekend, guys, and thanks again.
Thanks, Bobby.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.